And one answer to this question is suggested by the homological mirror symmetry program of Kuncevich. So the basic idea here is that if M and X are mirror dual, then there should be an equivalence, maybe more than one, between what's called the derived Foucaille category of the symplectic manifold M and the derived category of coherent sheaves on X. So let me put this on our table here. I have this derived Foucaille category of M. I have derived category coherent sheaves of X, which I'm putting over here. And despite what you may have heard, this is not a scary thing at all. However, to me, this is scary. So I'll make a disclaimer. There are lots of people in the audience who understand this side of the board much better than I do. And I may, if you ask hard questions, direct you to them. However, I know something about this side, so this is what I want to talk about. So over here, the objects are graded Lagrangian submanifolds. Over here, the objects are, say, vector bundles, or more generally, complexes of vector bundles. And since they're complexes, we're not interested in them up to isomorphism. We're just interested in them up to what's called quasi-isomorphism, so maps between complexes that induce isomorphisms on all homology should be considered equivalences. So this is analogous in topology when you consider two spaces that have the same homotopy theory, if there's a continuous map between them that induces isomorphisms on all homotopy groups. Okay. So the morphisms on here are defined in terms of Lagrangian Floer groups. I had someone at one of the breaks try to explain to me what this is. So between two Lagrangian submanifolds. And over here, let's say that we have chosen an equivalence between these two sides, phi. So I apply this functor to my two Lagrangians. I get two complexes of vector bundles on my space X. And the morphisms in this category are given by, well, I can take homomorphisms between complexes of degree 0, say of degree 1, degree 2, and so on. Altogether, those form the X groups between these two complexes. Okay. So if there's a pair of vector bundles, this is something easy to compute, and you can extend it to complexes. Okay. So under this correspondence, what do we expect in terms of symmetries on this side M? So whatever this category is, it's constructed in a nice way that if I have symmetries of M, they will induce autoequivalences of this category. So there's a homomorphism from the symplectomorphism group of M to autoequivalences of the derived Foucaille category. And under our equivalence with this side, this should be isomorphic to autoequivalences of my category of complexes of vector bundles. And so given such an equivalence, I ought to be able to take a symplectomorphism and associate to it some symmetry, not of the variety X or the complex manifold X, but of its category of complexes of vector bundles. And there are various guesses as to, given some particular symplectomorphism, what kind of symmetry do you get over here? Okay. So the answer, one proposed answer to this question, where have all the symmetries gone, is that symplectomorphisms of M should give symmetries of the category of vector bundles or complexes of vector bundles on the dual. Okay. And what Seidel-Thomas did is take a very particular nice class of symplectomorphisms and propose what is mirror to them over here. So this is what I want to describe. So these are the so-called Seidel-Thomas twists. And the idea here is that given a Lagrangian sphere in your manifold M, you can associate to this some kind of Dane twist of M that generalizes taking a circle, say, on a surface, cutting it out, twisting around, and gluing it back together. And you could ask, if I have a symplectic manifold and a complex manifold that I think are mirror dual, and I have Dane twists on this side, what should I get on that side? Okay. So this Lagrangian sphere is going to get sent to some vector bundle or complex of vector bundles over here on my derived side. And as someone was explaining to me over one of the breaks, maybe under some hypotheses like L exact, one can check that this Lagrangian Fourier cohomology between L and L is just isomorphic to the cohomology of the N-sphere. So over here, under my equivalence, this should be isomorphism with the homomorphisms from the image of L. And so the homomorphisms of phi L should look like the cohomology of Sn, right? So in this case, we say that phi of L, this complex of vector bundles, is a spherical object in my category. And now the theorem of Seidel-Thomas is that you can figure out a way to associate to a spherical object in such a category a symmetry of the category. Okay, so given an object that I'm going to call S in dx, which is n spherical, so its graded homomorphism group looks like the cohomology of an n-sphere, we get what's called a spherical twist. So T for twist, and a sub S to remind me along which object I'm twisting. And this is an element of automorphisms of this category of complexes. And you can say precisely what it is. And in practice, it's more computable than I ever expected it to be. Okay. So I want to define for you the action of this twist, say, on some vector bundle E, or a complex of vector bundles. And it turns out that this is more or less a co-kernel of some natural homomorphism. So I look at all the homomorphisms for my fixed spherical object into my vector bundle. This forms some graded vector space. I look at that tensor S, and now I can take one of those graded homomorphisms and apply it to S. So this is some evaluation. And I get a homomorphism from here to my vector bundle E. Okay. And whatever the twist of E is, it's what fits in this diagram as a co-kernel. So here, this is the co-kernel of the evaluation. Now, you have to understand co-kernel in some clever way in order for this to be true. So there's a notion of something called a homotopy co-kernel. And that makes it precise. Okay. So this was Seidel-Thomas's proposal for what a Dane-Twist should correspond to. And I think at the time they gave this proposal, they felt that the Dane-Twist ought to, on the simple electrical side, ought to fit into a diagram like this. I don't think this was known, and I believe this is now known under some hypotheses. So this really does seem to be the right mirror dual to a Dane-Twist. Right. So I want to discuss next an example, a nice classical geometric example. So the geometry I'm going to describe, I think, goes at least back to Felix Klein and maybe before. So you take, and I should also say this is one of the motivating examples for Seidel-Thomas. So you take a finite subgroup of SL2C. There's a sort of undergraduate classification of such things. Roughly, they look like double covers of cyclic groups rotating a sphere. Dihedral groups rotating and flipping a sphere, and symmetries of regular polyhedra. Okay? And this thing acts on C2 linearly. The only fixed point is the origin. And I can take the quotient. So this is some singular complex surface. And it's very nice. It's what's called a simple hypersurface singularity. So it's the zeros of some polynomial function on C3. And what that polynomial function is was worked out by Felix Klein a long time ago. Okay. And for surfaces, for algebraic surfaces, in a very concrete way, you can take a singular surface and create a resolution of it. So some nice complex manifold that maps to it and is an isomorphism away from the singularity. And there's a minimal way to do this. In this case, if you use Felix Klein's equation for this thing, you can write this down very explicitly. You just have to keep blowing up the singular points until they go away. And you're going to get some nice complex manifold, which is a resolution of this. This also appears in differential geometry as a ALE space, an asymptotically locally Euclidean space. So this was studied a lot by Kronheimer. Right. So we're interested in the geometry of this space, and somehow this is going to lead us to some spherical twists. So inside of here, I have the one singular point, which is the image of the origin under the quotient from C2 to C2 mod G. And I look at its pre-image under my resolution. And this is some complex codimension 1 thing inside of X. So this is the exceptional divisor of this resolution. And it's irreducible. It has some components. It breaks into a union of things EI. So these are the irreducible components. And the geometry of this is very explicit. So each I, each component, looks like a copy of CP1, so the Riemann sphere. And you can see what the holomorphic normal bundle looks like. You can compute the self-intersection, it's just minus 2. So roughly, you know, locally analytically, this looks like CP1 sitting inside its holomorphic cotangent bundle. And I can draw that. So in the case where this is just C2 mod plus or minus the identity matrix, I get something called the quadric cone. Its resolution, my office mate calls the nuclear power plant. So it looks like this. You just blow up this point. You introduce a CP1 in here. I'm just drawing the real picture. And this really is the cotangent bundle of P1. Okay? So it's just sitting inside of this cotangent bundle as the zero section locally. Right. So the nice classical fact about this surface is that this forms some configuration of curves. They intersect each other in certain ways. I can take the dual graph of this collection of curves. So for each curve, I put a node. For each intersection, I put an edge. And so let me call this dual graph gamma. The dual graph of E is a Dinkin diagram of type ADE. Okay? So it looks something, here's some examples. This is maybe one configuration of curves that I could get. And the corresponding Dinkin diagram is just A3. Maybe I get a configuration that looks like the following. Then I get the Dinkin diagram D4. And maybe I have something like the following. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Like this, and I get the Dinkin diagram E6. If I, at each curve I put a node, and for each intersection I draw an edge. Okay. So using after a little thought, I claim that these curves sitting inside the surface give me spherical objects. So you can check that if I look at just the trivial vector bundle sitting on EI and it's zero off of my component, this is the structure sheaf of EI, you check that this is inside of the category of complexes of vector bundles. It doesn't look like a vector bundle, but it's equivalent to some complex of vector bundles. So you can check that this is a spherical object, two spherical. And this is a fairly general fact about curves in a complex surface that have self-intersection minus 2. So you check that this is a two spherical object, so we're going to have some twist associated to it. You also check that if I compute the graded homomorphism groups from one of them to another, and I take its dimension, this is just the number of edges from I to J in my diagram gamma. So my diagram gamma really knows everything there is to know about this configuration of curves in the surface. Yeah? And when you have a bunch of spherical objects with this property, this configuration, this is called a gamma configuration of spherical objects. So the next theorem of Seidel-Thomas that's relevant for us, and this is part of this theorem is what Hugh and I are trying to generalize, is that, so if I have some gamma configuration of spherical objects, then the twists associated to each of these things, I can ask, try to take Ti and Tj next to each other, and how does that compare to Tj Ti? So the twist Ti satisfy braid relations. This is part of the theorem. So in type A, if I take this one and that one, say Ti and Ti plus 1, they satisfy the usual braid relation Ti, Ti plus 1, Ti, Ti plus 1, Ti, Ti plus 1. Okay, and there's an analog of this for various diagrams. So the relations are given by incidences in the graph. Okay, so this means I can take the group associated to gamma, some kind of generalized braid group, that's determined by these relations. So in type A, it gives me the classical braid group of Artin. And this generalized braid group acts on my category by symmetries. So this is the braid group. And the real theorem, the hard part of the Seidel-Thomas paper, is that if the dimension of x is greater than or equal to 2, so this applies to our surface case and up, and gamma is of type AM, so just a chain, then this action is faithful. And their proof is, I think, very beautiful, and for me, hard. So it's not self-contained. It has to refer to another paper that Seidel wrote with Hovanov. And the idea is to construct some universal example of such a thing, map your category to this universal example, and show that it's faithful on this universal example. But to know that you can do that, you have to work hard. So you have to have some topological presentation for your braid group. It's not the usual one. You have to do a little flow error theory to write down some algebra associated to this topological presentation. And you have to show that algebra has some nice properties so that you always get a functor from your category, say dx, to derive category of modules over this algebra. So there's a lot to be done. And I think that if I were smarter, I could probably do this in types D and E, but we're trying a different method. Right. So I think this is okay. So far, types D and E are an open problem. Faithfulness, I mean. And this is related to a lot of things. This is related to the space of so-called stability conditions for your category, which is supposed to be some model for the stringy Kähler moduli space, whatever this is. And it's also related to geometric representation theory. So one would like to know that it's faithful also in these cases. And this is what I'm working on with Hugh Thomas. So our theorem so far So now this is Hugh Thomas. Is that if, so in dimension two, and it could be complexes of vector bundles on a surface, or it could be some more general two-dimensional category. And dimension two and types A, D, and E, we have faithfulness of this action. Okay. And we've also been thinking about dimension n. At the moment, it seems harder, but also from the things we can prove about dimension n, my feeling is that once we figure it out in dimension n, everything will simplify if we understand things well enough to do it in dimension n. So we're working on dimension n, but already I'm happy about dimension 2. So if I have a chance a little later on, I'll explain an application in dimension 2. Okay, so let me say just a little bit about the idea of the proof, very vaguely. So our method is to use a certain normal form for braids. It's called the Garside form or structure. So this gives you some way to take an element of your braid group and factor it into some nice pieces that you understand. Okay. So in particular, up in front, you get a bunch of, say, positive crossings, and you can put all the negative crossings at the end. Okay. And this allows us to do induction on the number of factors. And the idea is that if I'm given a braid group element and I take some composition of the twists corresponding to this, I can apply it to one of my spherical objects and ask, can I tell what happened? Or can I tell what alpha is by looking at T alpha on all the SIs? And the answer, well, I'll put SJ, the answer is yes, at least in dimension 2. We study maps from SI to T alpha SJ, and by studying such maps, we're able to detect what alpha 1 is, the first factor. So we peel that off, and then we repeat. We figure out what alpha 2 is, and so on. And so it allows us to completely figure out what alpha was from this data. Okay. So we haven't lost anything. The action is faithful. So we study these maps to detect alpha 1. And so on. Okay. So how much time do I have? It's already done? OK. So let me just say, sorry about that. Let me just say that the main application for this so it uses our theorem on faithfulness and a theorem of Richard Thomas and Bridgeland to describe the space of stability conditions for this space. In types D and E, they were already able to do this in type A. Thank you. Right. So this was their motivating example. And the idea here is that a resolution of singularities should be dual to a deformation of the singularity. So there's some general philosophy about this. And for the deformation, the deformation and the resolution are diffeomorphic. But they're not the same complex manifold. So in particular, the deformation is affine. And this is really not affine. It has projective curves inside of it. So what happens to these CP1s in the deformation? They're no longer algebraic. They're just Lagrangian spheres. And the twists along those Lagrangian spheres, the Dain twists, are supposed to be a mere dual to this. And I think this is actually precise in type A. And I talked to Seidel about this in type D and E, and he said, oh, that would be very interesting. So. Yeah. Uh-huh. So there's a very uniform answer. It's related to the Bragg group. So you take a particular model for a k-pi 1 for the Bragg group. So the fundamental group is your Bragg group, and there are no other homotopy groups. And what was first known is that a certain piece, a connected component of the space of stability conditions, is a covering space. And the Bragg group action on the category induces a Bragg group action here. And it lands in the group of Deck transformations. So if you knew the Bragg group action was actually faithful here, it would be all of the Deck transformations. And this would have to be the universal cover. And that's what turns out to be true. So this is here the universal cover. And it's kind of funny because there's a paper of Deline where he works out the theory of these Bragg groups. And he works really hard to show that this universal cover is a complex manifold. And this follows from the theory of stability conditions. That's kind of cute. After taking the quotient by the Weyl group. Yeah, so this is, you have some Cartan associated to gamma. So there are some reflecting hyperplanes. You take those out. And then the reflection group, the Weyl group, acts freely on that, so you can take a nice quotient. And part of the theorem of, I don't know, Breeskorn or Deline is that this is a k pi 1 for the Bragg group.